listen, don't mention the war. I mentioned it once, but I think I got away with it all right. So, it's all forgotten.
So, welcome back to Don't Mention the Fussball. This is episode 38, I believe. Oh, so I've been faithfully assured. We've had one game of the Bundesliga, sort of, already. A bit of a ghost game, and we'll talk about that later on. But we've got three of us here tonight to talk about what's going to be happening. You know, what has happened over the last week, and also what might possibly happen with the sort of derby game tomorrow against Union. We have with us here young Patrick, who's sporting a very impressive beard.
Thanks.
That's quite all right.
Hello, everyone.
Also Marcus, who is looking equally impressive, I might add. If I can just sort of hand over to my fellow host just to say hello.
Marcus, are you good? Are you good to go technically? You seem to be having some problems.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I look so desperate? I have some
no, problems
with audio. I just had some problems, but I think now, can you say something? Just like a few tones?
Testing 1, 2.
Testing.
Perfect. Okay. Now I'm there, but not with the audio setup I wanted to have. Okay. Hi, all together. Nice to see you again. After such a long time.
I've blown it now.
Yeah, we were throwing ideas around for how to, you know, describe what happened the last game against Hoffenheim. Simon, do you want to, what were your first impressions after watching the game?
It was really very strange, because in the UK it was all out on BT Sport. And just seeing the build-up to the game, looking at the ground, I know it's just Hoffenheim we're talking about, but to see a stadium like that empty, like nobody there, and you can hear the announcements being made in the stadium, and yet there was nobody there to hear them. It was really, really weird. That's before even the game started. It was just surreal. I mean, I sort of commented on Twitter and things at the time, and it's not got any more weird or any less weird, I should say. Now it's really odd. And actually, watching the game and seeing the players running around doing their thing. But just being able to hear them shouting, you know, cursing, or in some people's cases saying rather rude things, and not have any background noise, it was just extraordinary. Yeah,
that's true.
Not yeah. Good. I'd rather be there myself. Yeah. But
Marcus, what did you? What were your thoughts?
I said last time already that I go pretty often to like fourth league and fifth league and also sixth league sometimes. So I'm pretty used at these games. I always love it to have stuff like some old man behind me talking about private life of the players and such things. You know, sitting behind me and commenting the game, and you hear basically just these two and the players shouting at each other. So I like this atmosphere. It had a bit of that as well.
Yeah.
I go to watch Bundesliga or Hertha because I like also the audience, the presence of this, and like the whole that what the ultras do, and like the reaction of the public. But it's not that I completely dislike football just because that's not there. So I still watched it. What I really liked about this game was that you could hear the birds chirping throughout the whole game. That was really, really nice. That's what I like. And yeah, you hear the balls, and you hear the commands they shout at each other. It's a different layer of the game, which I think it was okay. Yeah, and I read a few things later that players, or that at least people said about players, that they don't have so much pressure now, that they, you know, that they, as there's no audience in the back, in the background, the players, they don't go to the referee, complain and try to, you know, this whole emotional thing we actually, we don't love anyway, you know, if the player go to the referee. This didn't happen. So this is something that, which is actually very positive. Yeah.
That's true. How do you I guess I missed, maybe I underestimated what I was going to miss because I didn't have the sound on when I watched the game. I was on the treadmill, running on the treadmill, and I was listening to something else. But yes. I watched, yeah, I was listening to me. That's what I did. Okay, what was I was going to say? No, it was weird. I mean, I had a few thoughts. But they applied more to the actual game. But before I forget, I just wanted to make a recommendation. I don't know if you guys know about that guy, but his name is David Squires, and he is a cartoonist for the Guardian.
No.
Every week, every Tuesday, he, you know, does stuff about mostly the Premier League usually, but this week it was Bundesliga because that's the only thing going on. And yeah, theguardian.com. And right, yeah, if you Google David Squires, Squires, David Squires Guardian, the first result should take you to his page. And I think it's really good. It's funny, it's clever, and it's right on point. I never miss it.
Yeah.
So yeah.
In terms of the UK with newspapers, the Guardian is probably one of the better ones, I would say.
Yep. I think so because they also have a good podcast as well. So you know, that's something. But about the atmosphere, I can't really comment on it. Like, but Marcus, you mentioned the birds before. Mm-hmm. I had no idea. You're the first person to mention that, and that's. Mm. I mean, maybe that says something about Offenheim as a venue, as a Bundesliga city. But,
City.
And I'm being generous. So, there you go. But I think, some people bitched about, you know, the Hertha players not respecting, social distance while celebrating the goal and all that nonsense. But I think besides that, it seems to be a success.
Mostly, there was few little things, yes, in the goal celebrations, and I find it hard to criticise that. You know, because they're all pumped up, these guys, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
But for the most part, people were wearing masks, and the subs were sitting in the stands with distances in between them, and they were masked when they did so. And it's early days as well. This is the first game, or the first wave of games, when they've started off. So, I find it hard to criticise them. I mean, they had a good stab at it.
Yeah, for first start, for first week, I think it was, well done overall.
Yeah. Mm. I'm sure they will sort of tighten up things in terms of the goal celebrations and things. I'm sure they will. It's difficult for these guys because it's their whole life. It's their work and what have you. I'm happy to cut them a little bit of slack.
Oh, absolutely.
The general public. Probably less so.
that had to be expected, Like it's your first game in like 5 weeks or something, or probably more, and you just scored. Mm. So of course you're gonna grab your teammates and give them a hug or something. So
But it's not like that the DFB or the DFL, I don't know who made the rules. It's not that they did forbid it to hug or to make a goal cheer. We call it cheer? celebrations, goal celebrations. Just that they made not English word, Empfehlung. Like they said, it would be better not to do, but we don't forbid it.
The advice against it.
Advice, yeah. Exactly. That's the word.
Yeah.
So it's not that the players did something illegal, but it's just something they would better have not done, but they did. So, but it's not something illegal what they did. That's also what it's a misconception in the public.
Mm.
On the other side, you had like, you know, like before the goal, people like they were staying in this 16 meters area, penalty area, mm-hmm. and like they stay with like. You know, packed on each other with like 30 centimeters of distance, yeah. and then you bother about that they make a goal. Yeah. So it's you know it's
yeah.
a strange measurement you take here.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, that's a weird double standard. I mean, I guess they are expecting close contact during you know corners or you know crossings and stuff like that, but everywhere. In every situation that it can be avoided, then they are trying to, you know, enforce that recommendation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I guess you know it's not an ideal situation, but it's the least shitty solution, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. So. Nicely put.
Thanks. So, Marcos, I know that you had a good idea the other day. You wanted to summarize the game into 11 statements, if you like.
Yeah.
So, do you want to go ahead?
I called it the story of the game, which is basically just, you know, like the things what happens, like in 11 sentences. So rather than telling too much about systems and these things, I thought it would be nicer make a summary of the game with 11 sentences. Okay, so I'm reading it. The story of the game. The first game, Hertha, it was the first game as a so-called Geisterspiel. Takes place in Hoffenheim or Sinsheim, You could hear the birds chirping throughout the whole game. Hertha starts with a unusual starting 11 with Ibisevic, Schjelbred and Pekarik. The first half starts with Hoffenheim seeming somewhat stronger. The second half is very good. Hertha is very good. First goal is a shot from Pekarik, who got deflected by a Hoffenheimer into his own goal. Second goal, a marvelous header by Vedat Ibisevic, assist from marvelous flank by Mittelstädt. And the third goal by a magnificent solo from Cunha, who hit the goal from a very steep corner. While cheering on the pitch, the players forget social distancing and will write about it for the rest of the week. Then Jessic Ngankam makes his debut as a professional, and we all love him already. The atmosphere is weird, but you can hear the players shout, which is also fun. So this was my story of the game.
All right. Excellent. I also tried... No, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just was about, like, there may be a few of these points we can go a bit into depth, like Jessica Gunkham, but we can do that later.
Okay. Well, I mean, I had too much work last night and this morning. So I came up with only 9 statements, not even 11.
Okay. But, you can make out of one comma, you can make a point. So maybe.
Oh, yeah,
so,
sure.
So you get 11 sentences.
All right. Okay. Thought number one. I don't know if it was me, but I thought there was a lot of slipping and sliding in the first few minutes. I don't know if the players were rusty or if the pitch was not maintained properly, but I mean they seem to slip a lot. Just you know, I have nowhere to go with that statement, but it was just an observation. Two, Hertha missed 2 fantastic chances near the end of the first half. It was still 0-0 at halftime, and I remember thinking, oh boy, with those missed chances. If they get scored on early in the second half, they're going to lose. But fortunately, that didn't happen. Number 3, Hoffenheim had a lot of very good chances in the second half, but could not convert. That's obvious, but you know, number four, this game could have ended 6-4 for that reason. Number
for who,
five,
for
Hertha.
Oh, okay.
I think so. Like if they had they converted their chances in the first half, maybe that could have, you know, blown the game wide open, and maybe you know, both teams would have said, all right, fuck defense, let's go, let's attack. Okay, number five. The stats overall were fairly even, like possession and you know a number of passes and you know stuff like that. But yeah, the key of the game is Hertha converted their chances in the second half, and Hoffenheim did not. Number six. Shout out to Jarstein for stopping a shot with his balls. that number six brings to view all the level of my technical expertise when it comes to football. number seven, shout out to the Sun crew picking up his fucking hell a few seconds after getting hit. Did you hear that?
Yeah,
that was awesome. You did it? Okay, Marcus, I'll send you a link on Telegram in a few minutes.
Oh yeah, great! I heard it in German, so
yeah, it was, like,
it was all over Twitter.
That was the one of the highlights of the game. Number eight.
Not for Jarstein, it wasn't.
No, that's true. That's true. Number eight, and that's my most technical observation, and I picked it up from elsewhere. Hertha won 21 aerial duels in the game, jumping duels, and Hoffenheim only won 10 of them. So that made a good difference. And out of these 21 that Hertha won, 18 of them were won in their defensive third. So that showed good defensive discipline, good positioning, and a lot more stability, I think.
That's an interesting stat.
We could probably thank the new coach for that.
I also saw
a few like more technical analysis, and they showed screenshots showing the 4-4-2. Formation, and they seem to be well disciplined and well well positioned for most of the game, and it was impressive. And they still gave up quite a few really nice chances to Hoffenheim, so that's good, that's an improvement, but you know it's there is still work to be done for sure. And my last thought, Cunha's goal. I'm not going to say I thought it was the goal of the week, and I'm maybe not goal of the season, but maybe top 20 goal of the season, maybe.
It was a cracking solo goal.
It was just
him. He just did his thing and he finished it. What can you say?
And I also noticed something. I mean, that's my fault because I forgot, I guess. I honestly thought that Cunha was maybe like, you know, 25 or 26, and most of his development was already, you know, completed. He's only 20.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's good.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome. I think he signed long-term, isn't he, for several more seasons?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
brilliant.
Yeah. Well, Hertha doesn't give any more informations about the length of the contract, but yeah, if you pay, was it 18 or 25, Cunha? He was just 18, I think. He was not so expensive one. Like Piontek was more expensive.
Piontek was more expensive, I think.
Okay. And I think if you buy 18 for 18 millions, you don't make a contract for 2 years, I guess.
Yeah, that was a good piece of business. So yeah, that's good. So yeah, Marcus, we can go back to your summary of the game. Was there any specific aspect that you wanted to develop?
I think Jesse Ngankam needs to be mentioned. He's he's one of our youth players, which played for I think the U18 or U19. Do you know that, Simon? Maybe you're a bit into the Hertha youth. I think it's the U19, and he's Jan is very, very fond of him. It was a bit uncertain because he didn't have a professional contract yet, so it was a bit uncertain that he maybe would leave Hertha, go to either Salzburg or to Bayern Munich, where he, of course, like Bayern Munich, he wouldn't have had the chance to play for the next 10 years or so.
or indeed ever.
Yeah, exactly. And so we were pretty happy that he came in, and he signed actually the contract this week. I think it was yesterday, or was it announced today? He's now, in any case, like long-term Hertana now, which I'm very happy of, because he came in and you really could feel that he wanted to do so. He wanted to score, he wanted to have the ball, and he was really active. Okay, it was the last 5 minutes or the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So, but you really, I think he might be very strong.
It's nice to see hunger, I think. You know, he wanted to get in there and do things.
Exactly. Yeah. Hunger is something what we lacked a bit anyways in the last years, didn't we?
Yeah.
That's true. So, he is 19. So he was born in Berlin, which I didn't know. And he spent his entire youth career at Hertha from 2006 to now. So that's pretty cool.
And I like these stories. I like these, you know, like kids growing up here and
local kids,
the local guys
reaching the big time.
It's good old fashioned football.
Yes, yeah, absolutely,
exactly.
Simon, did you grabbed your attention from the game specifically?
I mean, it was fairly obviously it was the first game back, you know, after quite a lengthy break, and that was quite a thing in itself. That would be the first point, obviously, but and then sort of moving on to the fact that it was a ghost game was all kind of weird, but we've all talked about that already. So I won't sort of dwell on that, really. I mean, we were pretty shaky at the start of it all, I thought. I guess everybody was nervous and what have you, and I was a little bit apprehensive at the start of it all, thinking that we might do the normal sort of Hertha kind of thing and then concede and it all goes tits up. But that didn't happen, luckily. There were loads of missed chances and things from both sides, really. I mean, we were quite lucky in that, you know, Hoffenheim had shots and some of their strikes and things had goes, but for the most part they just missed it or skied it or just did stupid stuff, and really we got away with a load of stuff really during the course of that game. And a combination of that and the fact that Baumann saved their bacon lots of times. So it's a two-way kind of thing, really, in that if they had scored some of their chances or got anywhere vaguely near scoring, it could be a different story. But then again, if Bowen hadn't made some of the saves that he had, and some of them were pretty good saves, you know, on one hand, it could have been the other side of the coin for Hertha, but on the other side of the coin, it could have been an absolute trouncing if they hadn't had a good keeper. There's two ways of looking at that, really, depending how you view it, but when it came to the sort of second half, it was sort of all square and anything could have happened really at that point. I think probably the key thing was, Maxi Mittelstädt, I think, had a bit of a long distance shot that was going nowhere near the goal from a distance. I think it was Maxi anyway. And then it caught that deflection which went in as an own goal. And that really sort of was a turnaround point in my view. It was a stroke of good luck, perhaps. But and then shortly afterwards, Vedad had been sort of quite a presence throughout the game, and then he just happened to get there and did that header, down into the dirt, so that Bauman had no chance whatsoever. And when you were 2-0 up at that sort of stage, then the game really sort of turned round within the space of about sort of 2 minutes or so. But the goal from was it Kuna, I think it was. I mean, that was just a piece of magic. That was a beauty to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying to find the exact time of all three goals. I guess I could.
The first two were within 2 minutes. They were like really, really close. And that really was it, I suppose.
You're right. 58th minute, 60th minute, so 2 minutes, as you said, and then 74th minute, Cunha's goal.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I mean, that was a thing of beauty, really. Cunha's goal. That was nice to see, and it was just him. He just did his thing, and that was quite glorious.
Absolutely.
But
go ahead.
I've mentioned Bauman and things at the Hoffenheim end, but you have to admire the dedication of Jahrstein to save that shot with his ghoulies.
Jesus!
Ghoulies.
Oh yeah, and that's a good one. And actually, that was one I forgot to add in my thoughts, 11 thoughts. That should have been thought number 8, actually, to stay in the Jahrstein's topic. I'm surprised that doesn't happen more. goalkeepers getting nailed in the balls.
I'm still Rooner hope that it happened even less.
Yes.
Somebody answered on Twitter, but he already has children, so it's okay.
Yes. But those guys. they probably wear cups, protective cups when they play, but still, even, or maybe not, because it's really not comfortable to run
with cricket. You call it a box, which is fine if you're standing at a crease playing cricket, but as a goalkeeper, probably not so much. But having said that, sometimes you pay the cost.
That's why I wonder that it doesn't happen more often, because my wife also said, like, hey, don't they do wear protection? And I said, well, actually, I would have thought so, because it doesn't happen often. Well, players sometimes they get hit by the ball at their ghoulies. I know the professional name now, but actually goalies, it never happens to the ghoulies of the goalies.
the goalies. That's a good title. I like that.
That's good. I like it. I know that in ice hockey, you absolutely have to wear one, otherwise, it's suicide.
Yeah, but they don't move so much, so it's probably it doesn't stand so much in the way, because in ice hockey, the goalies. They stand pretty still the whole time, like with the legs in the same position. So,
but
football, they run around, and it's if you have something down there. I never wore one, so I don't know.
I did when I used to play baseball, and it sucks.
Oh, it sucks, really. Yeah. It's an interesting topic. Really, I would like to proceed with this.
And actually, yeah, in I'm getting Vietnam War style flashbacks in martial arts. It's recommended because I didn't wear any, and at some point I got nailed in the. I got nailed there with a kick pretty hard, and I had to take a break. And the sensei, the instructor, told me afterwards. He said, "You really should wear one, even if it's only like a standing up combat, like a taekwondo or something, or even just boxing or something," because he told me the story of this guy in a competition. It was a heavyweight judo, I think, and the guy tried to throw the other guy over his hip or something, and then both guy fell or whatever, and then the knee of the guy on top fell all his weight right into the guy's balls underneath him as they were falling on the ground. Fuck, that must have hurt.
Yeah. don't want to think about that.
No, yeah, that's gruesome. So yeah, if we are done about talking about getting nailed in the balls and the Offenheim game,
I think that's enough spoken about that really
for this week. Yeah, for one episode. Yeah, I think we're good. Do we have what's our observations preview regarding the game against the Berlin Derby against Union? What do you guys think?
I'm happy that we have Labbadia now and not Klinsmann or Nuri.
Oh yeah, good point.
I look much more confident towards the Derby, because I think with Labbadia probably we're going to make it. With Nuri,
no chance. Yeah. You're right.
Yeah,
but actually. Union had a decent game against Bayern. They lost 2-0, but they didn't look foolish. They made a game of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, they have their style. They have their defensive style, and they're also pretty good at doing some attacking. But of course, it's like one Union fair at the podcast Hauptstadt Derby. He said it like they have scheme A to play. And that's what you expect, and that's what you get from Union. If you know how to, play that, to play against it, then you're lucky. Otherwise, not. Bayern struggled with this. And for Hertha, I don't know at the moment. I don't know how we are. I don't know. It's really difficult to judge for me how our team is, on which status it is. If you're good or not, it's difficult to judge at the moment. So
it's hard to tell because it we're so early on in Labbadia. We don't know quite where we are really. But what happened? I mean, some of it. The start of our good fortune in the last game was a bit of luck, really, just to some extent. But what happened afterwards wasn't. And there was a lot of criticism on Twitter and what have you of the starting lineup initially, but it proved to work in the end. So, perhaps this guy will come through. I mean, on the basis of one game with a new manager, it's pretty hard to say, isn't it?
I mean, it's still. It feels like unexplored, uncharted water still. The with the zombie season, still in week two, and as you said, new coach, new system, and blah blah blah. But I mean, I think we lost the first game at the Alte Försterei 1-0. I think, right. Mm. Mm. Okay. Now this time it is at the Olympiastadion. I would say I know that last week I predicted a 3-1 defeat, and we won 3-0. So I think I'm going to switch it around this time, and I'm going to say I'm going to win 2-1.
So you're jinxing it now?
Maybe I am. Maybe I am.
You're jinxing it on purpose.
I apologize in advance. But do you have any predictions for the final score?
2-0.
A win?
I always go to watch every game. I go to watch. I go with the perception that we're going to win 2-0.
Okay.
I wouldn't like to say that for sure that we're going to win. Well, no. I personally think we've got a pretty good chance of winning, but to actually put numbers on it as to, you know, how many goals either way. Bit reluctant to do that. If I was forced into a corner, you know, maybe 2-1 or something like that. But I'd like to think we could we could win. Who knows? It's football.
It's like everything else.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you talk about this, because last time you said you don't like to predict games.
Well, me.
I think it was you and Patrick.
No, yeah, I don't mind.
I hate predicting.
Okay, there you go.
But forced into a corner, I'll say something. But
If we are done talking about tomorrow's game, we can move on to other things. Unless you wanted to add something, I have two quick observations.
I don't want to talk about the future.
This is not about the future, actually.
No, it's fine. It's just I want to say I don't want to talk about the derby anymore, because the derby is the future, and I'm too scared. So please, please go on.
Well, I mean, it's just something that I heard earlier this week, and I thought it was kind of funny. I don't know if you've seen that flow chart. You know, like yes, no, and then two outcomes, and then another question, and yes, no, and another two outcomes. There is one, I think it's a few years old actually, called which Bundesliga club should I support?
Yeah.
And one of the questions leading to Hertha was, does fascist architecture appeal to you? Did you see that one?
No, I didn't see it.
Okay, I'll post it in the on Telegram. It's good. It's funny. Honestly, it is because there was those kind of asshole questions for every club. I remember that for Bayern, are you ready to give up on all your morals just to see your team win or something? If yes, then you go to Bayern.
Okay.
I think it was Dortmund, the alternative or something. No, it's good. It is funny. And that made me think, half joke, half shitty question. If fascism is so horrible, and let's be honest, it is, why do they have the most beautiful buildings?
Well, that's, yeah.
That's not a bad question. You know, they do have nice buildings.
They are made to make a statement, sort of fitting with sort of fascist, ideology. You don't like the ideology at all. I absolutely fucking hate it, but the buildings in the case of the Olympiastadion and the whole Olympia Park there, it was built to impress, which it does. My personal view is I wouldn't want to condemn the stone and the concrete there for the arseholes that decided that it ought to be built. That's my view.
That's a good point. No, absolutely. And I mean, you said it perfectly. It is a statement. It's like going to a bank. Like, you know, a bank, a traditional bank has like, you know, columns.
Yeah.
Want to look like a temple or something, like it's going to be there for the next 500 years. The building, the architecture makes a statement. What you're saying is true. It would be a shame to turn our backs to that stadium just because of, like you said, of the assholes who used it as a propaganda.
Yeah. I mean, there's huge, great nods and things in the construction of the building to sort of classical times. I mean, if you walk around the Olympic Stadium and then you walk around the Colosseum in Rome, the parallels are inevitable, really. Mm-hmm. And it's and both buildings were built for the same kind of reason, really. It's trying to impress the masses and keep them all on board and what have you. They all built for the same sort of reasons. And you wouldn't, people don't seem to want to condemn the Colosseum for the reason that it was built to try to sort of bring the mob on hand. And yet people were going there to be slaughtered. People don't seem to have the same criticism of that as they do for the Olympiastadion. I mean, both are valid points, but yeah, that's my view. I don't know.
I agree completely on that. Yeah. It's also, I mean, it's the same. Both are bad things, but the other one is worse also. I mean, what the Nazis did, but at the end it's a moral question as well, how you deal with that. So that makes it a bit difficult. On the other side, about the Nazi architecture, it's also like Tempelhof got built to make visitors feel little, because if visitors came and you had in Tempelhof, I don't know if you ever have been in the arriving hall in Tempelhof, in the old airport, you have this huge hallways, very, very, with high ceilings and with these very narrow roads, but very high. It's something very, like, they wanted to that visitors, that they felt small and impressed by arriving in this new state.
That's the chart I mentioned about the Bundesliga. I posted it on Telegram.
I need to disappear for a few seconds here. I'm sorry, guys.
Okay.
But 8 o'clock on a Thursday night, I have to go out there and make lots of noise because it's supporting people with the health service here. So
okay. In the meantime, I have a question for Marcos, and we will discuss it. And I'll ask you the same question when you get back.
You go for it.
Okay. So my question is, what is your favorite type of goal? Your favorite type of goal, is it like a diving header? Is it like a screamer from 25 yards or 25 meters? Is it like a back heel?
Did you call it screamer?
Yeah, screamer is when screamer. You kick, like it's like a cannon, a shot out of the cannon. Like, you know, you really kick it as hard as you can and like a rocket into the goal.
So you call it a screamer. I'm probably a screamer fan. Yeah, these goals, I always like them because they're usually very unexpected.
Yes.
Because the goals you really can follow, you know, like you have like a triangle passes and, you know, you approach the goal and then it's in. They're very fun to watch as well because they're like the climatic, they're very, very good. But on the other side, these long shots out of nothing, they're always unexpected and they're always like, whoa, I love them. But on the other side, I also love Cunha's goal. Yes. And I remember Alagui in the second league, Sami Alagui, he also shot three goals like this. I always loved this because, and also Dil Rosum in his first season, he also made a goal like this, like a solo, and then from the steep corner, it went in. I also like these because they're also very, very unexpected. Probably, yes. I like unexpected goals.
Okay. No, that's a good answer.
Which goals do you like?
I've been thinking about this way too much, but I think my answer would be related to the type of play and also to the camera angle that has to play a factor. I also like my screamers, but what I really really like is when you get the point of view from the camera on the sidelines, you know, next to the pitch, mm-hmm. and when the camera is directly behind the player, and you can see the curve of the ball.
Oh yeah, these ones.
Yeah, you can see the curve of the ball, and bonus points if it hits the crossbar, and then in the goal, inside the goal. Yeah. that is, oh my God, that is. If you hear it, oh, Simon is back, I think. A screamer with a good curve off the crossbar inside the net, that is.
That's beautiful. That's nice. Then I will send you a goal made by, I don't know since when you followed Bundesliga. This was actually one of the most beautiful goals I ever saw. It was Mönchengladbach, this Colombian or Peruvian guy. Was it Camargo? I will Google it and then I will send it to you. Then we can put it in the show notes.
Okay,
it was a goal like almost, I think, from the middle line, and he was like hitting it, and was like a screamer. It was very long, and actually he thought, no, this is not going to be a goal, and then it went over line. I will Google it and send it to you.
What you mentioned reminded me of, I think it was a Wolfsburg against Bayern, and I think it was in 2009, the year that they won the league. I think it was Graffit who he succeeded. He sent the entire Bayern defense in one direction, and then I think he backheeled it in the other direction. It's a horrible description, but I have to look it up, and I'll put it on the Telegram like everything else. Okay, so Simon, now that you're back, cheering for the frontline forces, the question was, what is your favorite type of goals? Like, not necessarily what is your favorite goal as such, but what type of goals do you enjoy the most? Like, you know, you know what I mean?
The real screamers, I think, are sort of like long-distance shots from a distance, just whacking screamers. In there.
We all answered screamers.
Oh, do we? Yeah. It's pretty obvious, I guess, for most people. But, I mean, some are quite clinical, you know, like with Ibisevic and things with his header. You know, he did absolutely the right thing, heading it down towards the ground in that last game, to beat the keeper. If he had tried to keep it up, he probably would have saved it. I mean, that was a great goal. It was a clinical goal. It's a sensible goal. But no, you can't beat the screamers coming in from a distance.
No, that's true. And I mean, it reminds me, or how about this? How about, I think I got to put a honorable mention for the screaming volleys. Like, you know, when the ball doesn't even touch the ground.
And you
see a guy running full speed and poof, you know, shoot it out of a cannon.
It very rarely works out, but when it happens, it's really sweet.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Or the flying header I had in mind, I think it was Van Persie for the Netherlands against Spain in 2000. 10 or 14. Anyway, yeah, that was like, you know, he dove like, you know, head first.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect.
That was quite impressive too. Yeah. Like, when it happens, that they're rare, but when it happens, it's quite cool.
Yeah. So yeah, so I got the graphic goal on Telegram right here. My answer was the screamer again,
yeah.
But with the camera on the pitch behind the player, when you can see the curve of the ball.
Yeah.
Right? And yeah. Bonus points if it hits the crossbar, then into the net. That's can beat that.
Just to add that element of danger to it as well.
Yeah, exactly. And when you can hear the ball come off the goal, the crossbar, and then with this metal, you know, this metallic, you know, the clang, and then poof into the net. Awesome. And that's another good thing about these Geister Spiele.
Yes, you can hear everything, can't you?
Yeah, that's really sweet.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, Meyer had, by the end of the game, Arne Meyer, he had a shot at the post you could also hear. As we're talking about.
That's true. I think it was 3-0 by that point. It could have been 4-0.
It could easily have been 4.
Yes, that's true.
It would have been his first Bundesliga goal. He was a pretty good scorer in the youth, but since he's a professional, he doesn't score anymore. I mean, he's still good, but he doesn't score.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
By the way, did we already speak about Thomas Lehmann? No, Thomas Lehmann.
Yes.
Jens Lehmann. I've got a co-worker called Thomas.
We didn't really, I think we mentioned it a little bit yesterday, not yesterday, but last episode, but no one thinks it's a good, idea, to be honest.
Bit of a loose cannon, I think, really.
Yeah, it is.
And I think it was Jan who mentioned that Vint Horst likes big names, and that's what he was going for in this case. Like, you know, Jens Lehmann is a big name. Let's go get him.
Yeah, big stupid name.
Yeah, it's. I don't know what kind of expertise he can bring, you know?
Well, I think he knows his shit, probably he has a good opinion about sportive decisions. That's probably something he has, but he's Hertha has done like from a CSR perspective, like from social. Social idealistic perspective, has done many things wrong in the 90s and also parts in the zeros years, and it's just something which got corrected since the Plates era, that we focus more on like being the good guys, anti-racist and all these things. I mean, nobody cared about racism in football in the 90s, but still, like, had a bit of a lack with on that part, and that's something we are really focused on, and like doing good things, like anti-racism and anti-bad things. and then you get this Lehmann guy, which just one thing he does is like being strangely homophobic. Not really that he's homophobic in an aggressive way, but like like this 90s homophobia of I don't know if I can shower next to a man if I know that he likes guys, you know, this kind of homophobia. And I think it's just horrible, and he doesn't understand it. I think he also likes it to have this kind of masculinity, which just feels like from a different area. And Hertha was really pretty doing very good at not having these kind of guys anymore in the club or like representatives. And now you have Lehmann, which is basically exactly that.
No, yeah, it's like a one step backwards in a way.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. That's true. That's a good point.
But more in these things. I think maybe he knows his shit in about football. That's probably something he knows. Yeah, that's probably what he knows, but the rest he doesn't know. He should not speak about the other things.
Yeah.
Hopefully,
talk about football. Other than that, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, exactly.
So like us, we shouldn't speak about football, but we know more about the other things.
Personally, I try not to.
Well, I mean, actually, on this podcast, we can, and we do often talk about anything but football. So you know, the name of the podcast says it all.
Some of the best work is done when we're not talking about football, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I agree with that. All right.
Patrick, did you see that Simon looks like an angel today? Did you notice that?
Yeah, it looks like you have wings.
with his feather wings on the
Yeah, board. you have wings behind you.
Your chair.
It looks like
it's a bit of sheepskin.
It's sheepskin, okay. looks good. Right.
What other interesting artifacts can I bring to this?
Well, you had a jungle last time, so this time it's angel wings.
This is my favorite axe.
All right. You're gonna go kill your neighbor.
I carve all sorts of interesting things with that. What else have we got here? It's a horn. I could make lots of noise with that horn.
But please go ahead.
No, we're not going there. But
Is it for you got whiskey? Me curious. Is it for drinking?
No, I have multiple drinking horns. That's like a trumpet. I have lots of stuff like that.
Oh my God! Wow! I mean, we gotta do an episode about those artifacts at some point.
Yes. I found a chunk of wood in the garden. And I've carved it into a shape of Odin.
With a Instagram.
Missing eye and everything. So
yeah, it's pretty awesome. Are you done with it, or you're still working on it?
I'm fairly well done with that one, I think. Okay. I'll do another one of Thor later, I think. But I've got to design it first, and that's where this comes in at the early stages, and then there's a sort of various carving knives and files and all sorts of stuff. So we'll get there. Hey, I'm stuck at home all the time.
We didn't say anything. That's awesome. Well, I mean,
I'm in quarantine, so basically I can do nothing. So
We think it's a good thing. So please go on.
You have to. You need a. You need an outlet for that creativity. So, hack away at those chunks of wood. I mean, it's better than killing your neighbors.
If any of these bloody neighbors have to be closer, though.
Yeah, exactly. that axe has to be of some use,
Yeah.
Better use it on wood than on people.
It is, yeah.
So sometimes I feel a bit sorry for the listeners who don't see the pictures when Simon is holding the axe.
Yeah, a visual move would be nice.
It's bloody sharp.
Okay.
Well,
Marcus, did you take a screenshot?
Sorry?
Did you get a screenshot, Marcus?
Wait, I can do that. Simon, okay, you have to hold the axe. Oh, no, wait, I need to... Oh, wait.
Brandish the axe.
Okay. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yes.
There you go. Done. I mean, when I had this sort of fairly new on, I nicked my left thumb because it is absolutely razor sharp, this thing.
Okay.
It's not like a blunt sort of instrument for sort of you know, sort of, you know, chopping wood or whatever. It's made for carving, and it's really, really, really sharp. So,
yeah. Kick-ass screen sharp.
That's it. Okay.
Very nice.
I saw your wooden statue on your Twitter account. Did you do that with your axe? Or no?
It's partly with that. I did the sort of rough shape with the axe and the fine stuff that I've done with like a whittling knife.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
With bits of sanding and things as well. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Nice. All right. So, do we have any closing notes or something or anything?
I still had a few topics, but probably you spoke about. I wasn't able to. The last episode, I just heard it half. So I don't know. Okay. Lehmann, you spoke already about it, and Markus Kosicke, which is the other one in the, how do you call it? Aufsichtsrat.
Yeah, like an advisory board, I think.
Advisory board, yeah. Mm. Like Lehmann is an advisory board, and Markus Kosicke is in the advisory board now as well.
Yeah, we mentioned him. Briefly, but I know nothing. He was at Nike before, right?
Yeah. Well, he's the advisor. How do you call the guys negotiating the salaries of the players? How do you call them in English?
In North America, it's general managers. But it's not the same structure here than in Europe, so I couldn't say.
But they're like kind of headhunters arguing. If Arne Meyer wants to have a salary raise or like his contract will get prolonged, and Michael Pretz does not speak with Arne Meyer, but he speaks to his
agent.
Agent.
Yes, he's agent.
Agent. Nothing more. Okay. And Markus Kosicke, this is the agent of Klopp.
That's true.
And he's the agent of, I think, also Julian Nagelsmann, like the Leipzig.
Oh yeah, the Leipzig coach. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and he used also to be the agent of Labbadia, funnily enough. Yeah. But he seems to be a good, clever guy, doing like being very well, like having a modern approach on things, and a bit quieter than Lehmann.
Is he Labbadia's agent, or he was just supposed to be
ex-agent?
Oh, ex-agent. Okay. So sorry, because otherwise that would have been like a conflict of interest or something. You know, working for the coach and working for the club at the same time.
Yeah.
But ex-agent. All right.
The voices go that it's actually still a kind of a interest conflict, like being, like knowing, like, you know, because if he's in an advisory board, he will have a very good insight on salary structures within the club. And, you know, then if he is an agent of external clients as well, maybe, you know, like coaches and others, he might have a conflict of like a role conflict. So
That's true.
It's difficult to judge, because on the other side he could also have an interest on bringing somebody into Hertha because of his connections, and maybe and he could have interest in earning some money, of course, as well. Like just say, because you know, Klopp will come in 3 years. Klopp will come to Hertha. Did you know that already? You didn't. No? Okay.
Okay. Well, awesome. Looking forward to it.
Well, I can't tell it to everybody, but I will tell it to you too. For example, if he would be able to force that and earn money on that, I don't know. No, probably he won't do that, because he knows how much Klopp will earn here, and he knows that Klopp will earn more in Bayern or Juventus or Real Madrid.
True.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure, but he seems to be a good guy. And well, then the other topic, what I also have is Hertha Kneipe. Did you ever speak about this fan club?
Yes, we did last week.
Did. Last week. Oh, okay, good. Then forget about it.
And it seems to be. I mean, it seems to be doing well, although last week that there was a slight drop in the total amount. But I mean, it's a fantastic idea, and well, I mean, every little bit helps nowadays, I think.
I've chucked money in towards it. Yeah, 18 euros 92, which seems to be the thought.
Me too.
Seems to be the thing. So,
but I guess it's going to keep going as long as the season lasts, I suppose.
I guess well, so. Yeah.
No, well, they have three more bars where they just had a limited amount, and there are three left.
Oh, is that right?
Okay. Yeah, because they just selected the 9 or 8 official bars doing some Hertha. I think it's actually official Hertha fan bars.
Okay.
Or hand pubs. Yeah, they just had the selected number, and I think it's 2 or 3 left, so it's not.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good thing to do. Because, I mean, those kind of bars in Berlin are sort of fading fast. I mean, the one that I used to go to for probably sort of knocking on 10 years, shut last year. And, yeah, it's been replaced by a place that's basically it's like a little restaurant. And it's not the same kind of feel to it at all, really. So if people can do anything to support and keep, you know, the old sort of traditional sort of Kneipers and things going, that's a good thing in my books.
Absolutely. Especially now where they lack an income. So it's really like it's existentialist for them.
Yeah. But actually, it's a good thing that you mentioned that, Marcus, because we can just say... what should we do? What could someone do to help if they want to know more about this? They probably have they can be reached on Twitter, probably. The Hertha Sniper initiative.
Yes. Yeah.
It's all over Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's probably like. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, well, maybe can we post it on the show notes? Like, because every episode gets also like or almost every episode gets a blog entry, or wherever, or on Twitter. Mm. Well, okay, maybe post some show notes. I think it would be nice.
I tend to retweet their stuff a lot anyway, the Hertha Kneipe stuff personally, but perhaps as I was here this time, I'll put some notes up on the website thing, and you know, including that.
Yep, I wasn't sure, but no, the Hertha Kneipe Twitter handle on Twitter is Hertha Kneipe in one word, no underscore, no nothing. No Kneipe, Kneipe with Hertha in front of it. Hertha Kneipe on Twitter. So if you want to help out,
get in there.
But, So maybe for the listeners, what's basically the setup? Like, there's a Zoom meeting where you can join, and it's basically like a bar. And the idea is that what you drink in this Zoom meeting, you pay over PayPal as if you would pay to the pub. But you don't have to attend the Zoom meeting, so you also can just pay. And in the Zoom meetings, there are usually like 20 till 30 people at the same time. And I join usually every second Kneipe day, and there were a few famous people in there. Like, there was Axel Kruse. Mm-hmm. He was the first star joining there.
That's true.
And then there was also like Zecke, Andreas Neundorf, which is now which used to be a long time player and a guy everybody loved, and he's now the U23 coach.
I think so.
And nice. Then there was also, who was the third one? Ingo Schiller, like the CFO.
Mm-hmm.
He joined last time. I didn't see him. And then there was also Olaf Thom. forget his name.
I'm not sure.
But Tom, the half Tom.
Okay.
All
right.
Yeah. It's nice that they joined, and they loved it. Like they stood for hours and talking about things, and like it was really like a bar atmosphere. It was
That's nice.
Cool. Yeah. All right. So, did we have anything else, or that's it, or
yeah?
All under control.
We didn't talk about coolies.
Cool. Or we could have some more axe stories.
we didn't talk about who, Marcus?
Ghoulies.
Ghoulies. Oh, sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, we did.
We did, yeah. Yes.
I think ghoulies have been covered.
Yes.
Luckily.
Let's save some for the next episode.
I just learned a new word, and I'm so happy that I have to keep on repeating it. So.
All these things that don't mention the football, delivered to you.
And then
amazing
some.
Vocabulary.
Yeah. So if
learning English lesson two.
Yeah. All right. So if people want to reach us to tell us how much we suck or whatever, where are we on Twitter? Twitter is a DMTF podcast, right?
Yep.
All right, DMTF podcast. I am at P Dupuy, P-D-U-P-U-I-S. Oh, sorry. Okay. And Simon, you are at?
Econet. I'm just making sure I get it right, actually, to be honest. At Econet 1892. And I dribble on about all sorts of random stuff. So, you know, take it or leave it.
That's what we are about. That's all we are about. Marcus, what about you?
I'm MX Pfeiffer. Pfeiffer like Michelle Pfeiffer, but with one F. So MX Pfeiffer.
I'm sorry, Marcus. You're not as good looking as Michelle Pfeiffer.
but I'm younger.
True.
but still she looks better.
All right, so that's it for us, and we'll have another episode after the derby sometime next week, probably.
Yeah, go for it.
All right, so thank you everyone. Thank you, Marcus. Thank you, Simon. So sorry, Simon, I kind of stole the host host thing from you. Sorry.
it's been a difficult day, so welcome to it.
Yeah. All right. So
thank you for the invitation.
You're quite welcome. Absolutely. Yeah. It's always a pleasure. And fingers crossed and thumbs pressed for tomorrow.
Absolutely.
Let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So thank you, everyone. And have a good one.
Yeah.
Ahoy.
Bye-bye. Yeah. Ahoy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.